than ever, like a street map held at arm's length. A few of the lowermost merged limbs of the canopy intersected the view, but they were spindly and uninhabited, and served only to enhance the sense of tremendous height. Shadows moved beyond the smoky partition, and the vehicle budged again. "Someone will rescue us," Zebra said. "Won't they?" "Someone may not want to intervene in what is clearly a private matter." Then I nodded at the partition. "At least one of them is alive in there. I think we'd better move before they do anything we might regret, like shooting us."
"Move where, Tanner?"
I looked down at the gap in the floor. "We're not exactly spoilt for choice, are we?"
"You're mad."
"Just possibly," I said, kneeling at the edge of the hole, spreading my arms wide around the rim and preparing to lower my head through it. "But I find it goes with the territory, Zebra." I lowered myself through the aperture until my feet found purchase against the gnarled top surface of the canopy branch against which we'd come to rest. It was a narrow branch. We were very close to its extremity, where it tapered to a fine, tendrilled point, like the nub of an onion. Once I had my balance, I reached up and helped Zebra through, though with the extreme elongation of her limbs, she hardly needed my assistance. Zebra looked up, appraising the looming bulk of the ruined vehicle. What had been the roof was a mass of scorched and melted components, only one of the telescopic arms remaining, which was the arm which was holding the vehicle in place, clutching precariously and twistedly at a somewhat higher branch. It looked like it would take very little more than a breeze to send the whole mass careering down to the mulch. Quirrenbach and the other heavy, who'd been in the forward compartment, were inside, but they were struggling with the door, which was wedged against a protrusion from the branch. "Voronoff's still alive," I said, gesturing a little distance up the branch where it thickened. He was crawling along it, slowly but methodically, and I decided the branch must have broken an otherwise unintentional fall.
"What are you going to do?"
"Nothing," I said. "He won't get very far." The shot was precise and surgical, sufficient yield to make a point, yet not enough to risk cutting through the branch. It made Voronoff stop in his tracks, but for a moment he did not look back in our direction. Zebra looked up into the overlying mass of structural branches where the figure who had fired the shot was standing. She stood with her hips slightly canted to one side, the stock of a heavy rifle resting against the convexity of one thigh. Chantrell shouldered the weapon, then commenced climbing down via an improvised staircase of linking branches. Above, her car was parked, intact, and three other dark-clad figures had spilled out onto the branch. They were covering her as she worked her way down to our level with even larger and nastier weapons. It was a small thing at first, just a smudge of phosphors on the deep radar screen, but it signified volumes. For the first time since leaving the flotilla, they had encountered something that lay behind them, something other than light years of empty space. Sky turned up the beam intensity and focused the phased array on the specific region where the echo had come back from.
"It's got to be it," Gomez said, leaning over his shoulder. "Got to be the Caluche. There can't be anything else out there."
"Maybe we're just seeing another piece of discarded junk," Norquinco said. "No." Sky watched as the phased array teased out details, turning the smudge into something with density and shape. "It's much too big for that. I think it is the ghost ship. Nothing else that big could be trailing us."
"How big is it exactly?"
"Wide enough," Sky said, "but I can't get an estimate of the length. She's keeping her long axis aligned with us, just as if she still has some navigational control." He tapped keys, squinting as more numbers popped up next